Thank you. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. And also I would like to thank the audience for coming despite late afternoon time and the beautiful weather outside. So here's the title of my talk, Ramsey Properties of Random Structures. I'm fortunate enough that during this day, today, you already underwent some short course in Ramsey's theory, so I don't need to give all the definitions. Nevertheless, because it took me by surprise, I have them on slides, but I will go quickly through this. So let me start with something really basic. So actually every child knows that if you have six people, then either three of them know each other or three of them do not know each other. And this is what's written here. Probably yes, but I can't test it. I mean, I can't learn if he knows. But I use this just to introduce the arrow notation, the Rado Erdős or Erdős Rado arrow notation, which is so handy in Ramsey's theory. So this statement means now in the formal language of graphs that for every two coloring of the edges of the complete graph K6, there is a monochromatic triangle. And here is a proof. Actually, self-explanatory proof. I will not go over it. Of course, this arrow notation generalizes in many ways. For example, n arrow k. That's clear, right? You color the edges of the complete graph on n vertices, and in every such coloring, you have a monochromatic complete subgraph on k vertices. So all the edges are of the same color, k choose terms. You can have more than two colors, R colors, then this subscript represents number of colors. You may have different demands in different colors, and this is a so-called off-diagonal or asymmetric Ramsey property. You may even go beyond to higher dimensions and have and color not pairs, but say T-tuples, and this T up here represents. But in my talk, I will almost exclusively talk about coloring pairs. So T would be 2, so it won't be there. And the Ramsey number, which was defined already, is the smallest n such that n arrows k. I'm just focusing on the two-color case, but you can easily... And for example, again, let's return to my initial example, R of 3 is 6. This is only part of the proof, the other part is here. Okay, let me leave this for a while. Now, because this is a survey talk, I should maybe give some historical background, and I would like to go to one point in the past, which was already referred to during Benny's talk, namely this result of Erdős from 47, where he put on the Ramsey number, and he used this novel at that time method, the probabilistic method, now we call it, for every edge, and decide on the color. This method. But maybe not everyone knows that actually at that time some twins were born. The same with some delay. But that was the first appearance, because you may view this random two color, you may view one of the colors, say red color, as a subgraph, as a random subgraph of the graph with probability 1/2. So that's the first time such a thing occurred. But a systematic study of random graphs started much later by Erdős and Reni in 59, in the 60s, 70s, 80s with Béla Bolobas book, and still is sort of still active field now. So let me introduce random graphs now. Let me define the two basic models of random graphs. So there are two basic models. Actually, now I see there are three basic models, but I will talk about two. The third one is a random regular graph, becoming more and more fashionable nowadays. But these two models are the binomial model and the uniform model. When n is the number of vertices, they are labeled. And then in this first model, the binomial model, you have the probability p of choosing an edge independently from all the others. So the number of edges here is a random variable with binomial distribution. In the other model, you fix the number of edges you want to have. So the number of edges is fixed, but you choose it randomly out of all possibilities. So They are different, but they are asymptotically equivalent in most instances under this equation, which simply says that the number of edges fixed in this model should be close to the expected number of edges in that model. Now, one of the main features of random graphs is the appearance of thresholds. So, if you have a graph property Q, which is simply, you can think of it as a set of graphs, then quite often there exists such a probability, or maybe I should also say that the whole theory of random graphs is asymptotic in nature, in a sense that those parameters depend on n, when n goes to infinity, and p typically goes to zero, although you may have p constant, there are interesting questions for that. So we say that Q have a threshold, or weak threshold, if there exists such a function, so this is also a function of n, I just suppress this n, a function p bar, so that if p, the edge probability p is slightly below, a little low, then almost surely the property doesn't hold for the random graph, while if you are a little bit above, it does hold almost surely, asymptotically almost surely. So for example, if you take a property of having a triangle, containing a triangle, then it's easy to see that the expectation is that the threshold is 1 over n, and this is because, I mean, as a heuristic only, because this is the expected number of triangles, and this quantity goes to 0 when p is less than 1 over n, little o, and Bolobash generalized it. And I wouldn't mention this result if not the parameter here. So it was just triangle for arbitrary small subgraph H. The threshold for the appearance of that subgraph as a random graph is determined by this threshold, where the exponent depends on the structure of this graph H, and more specifically at the maximum over the, say, half of the average over all subgraphs. So there's the number of vertices to the number of edges to vertices, that's the ratio which pops up naturally in random graphs because of the formulas for expectation. Okay. Now, I refer to that threshold as a weak threshold because sometimes, not always, but sometimes you happen to have a sharper threshold in the following sense, that you may actually... a smaller change in p makes the difference. So here, you can define it in ways, but this is one definition, that for every epsilon, if p is just slightly less than this threshold p bar, you don't have the property almost surely, and if it is just slightly above, you have it. In a different sense, you can say that the threshold, the width of the threshold is very narrow, is little o of the probability, of the threshold itself. So, for example, one such basic thing which was discovered in this very first paper by Erdős and Rény in 59, that connectivity has a sharp threshold, and it's even sharper than what I defined here. Basically here, is this threshold is log n over n, but it's very sharp sense here. And quite recently, I think it was 99, Friedgood characterized all properties which have sharp thresholds. This characterization, however, is quite complicated, and I will come back to it later, trying to show the sharpness of a particular Ramsey property. Now, so as I said, this first paper on probabilistic method, in 47, it was about Ramsey properties. And the random graph there appeared as a random color, actually. Now, what I want to talk in my talk is rather something else. I will have a random graph, and then I would expect a Ramsey property which holds for every coloring. So the coloring will be deterministic over a random graph. But to do this, we have to generalize the Ramsey properties to graph Ramsey properties, because in the definition I gave, we only talk about complete graphs, coloring edges of the complete graph and expecting a monochromatic copy of the complete graph. Here, in this generalization, that's the basic thing here, we have two graphs, G and H. G is a big graph or dense graph, H is a target graph, smaller one, and this notation means for every two coloring of the edges of G, you will see a monochromatic copy of H. And same version, now it makes sense to state the same, an analogous version for vertex coloring. I will very briefly talk about vertex coloring. It's rather easy and not so interesting as edge coloring, but it has some two interesting features I would like to mention. Of course, for complete graphs, it's trivial because that's pigeonhole principle, so it doesn't make sense for complete graphs. But for other graphs than complete, like, for example, if you are bored already now, you may try to prove this graph on 8 vertices arrows vertex-wise. So vertices are colored, a triangle, and there's the smallest one which doesn't contain K5. So it's a simple sort of exercise problem. Now, the first feature which is worth noticing about vertex coloring Ramsey properties is that it naturally generalizes the chromatic number. G arrows vertex-wise K2 in R, with R colors is exactly the same as to say that the chromatic number of G is bigger than R. I think you also know by this time what the chromatic number is, right? That's the smallest number, of course. So this means that you can still color. Sorry, that you can't color using R colors, because for every R color you'll have an edge with both endpoints same color, right? So the chromatic number must be bigger. And because of that, it's quite easy to find the threshold for this special case. But I will still show you those two lines, because for arbitrary graphs, it's sort of the same philosophy. The chromatic number of the random graph is less, is at most R, then it means that there exists a coloring, R coloring, with no monochromatic edge, which means that there must be a large hole in the graph, an independent set, of course, and takes the largest color class, which guarantees the size of that hole. It will have n over r vertices. So there must be somewhere a big hole, empty set, an independent set of n over r vertices. And of course, the problem such a thing is very small, it's 1 minus p, because there can't be any edge inside to this power. Of course, it may be anywhere, because the coloring was deterministic, so you have to multiply this by 2 to the n. And if you just choose p appropriately, this constant here, large enough, this second term, this small term, will kill the big term, and the probability will go to zero. That's a very simple argument, which then generalizes to other graphs. So how about other graphs? And for other graphs, suppose that our target graph is a triangle. A similar argument would say that if you don't have the property, there must be a big part of the graph which is triangle-free. But what is the probability of that? What is the probability that there is no triangle in a... Now, a big part of a random graph in this binomial model is fortunately a random graph on its own. That's a very good thing. That's the advantage of using this. Anyway, what we need now is a bound on the probability of not having any copy of a given subgraph in a random graph. And this is provided by so-called Janssen inequality. I say so-called because actually Janssen inequality is something else. It's a lower tail of X rather than this. This was proved by many people during 1 week of the conference in Poznań in 1987. And actually it was stimulated by this great result of Bolobazhov about the chromatic number. He first actually noticed, but he only did it for complete graphs, for cliques of his size. Anyway, this is just a historic remark. But maybe one more then. The research on those vertex colorings of Ramsey graphs started in the 80s. So from the 50s, when the random graph started, to the 80s, there was almost no research on Ramsey properties of random graphs. You could ask why. Oh, there are many reasons. Probably the one was that other properties seemed to be more interesting, or more like connectivity, triangle. Maybe somehow they were difficult, or it's just a matter of taste. But the first paper was in the first papers, people started to work in the 80s, and the first paper was Franklin Redl, 86, I will come. But then I also started to work on this problem with Uchak and Vogt. Vogt is now one of the main executive officers of Lufthansa. Flew here by Lufthansa, just to... and... until 87, when this became a fact. So I don't know what to say. It was a discovered or invented. you choose, whatever. This inequality was invented. I mean, this is a special case, of course, because you can state it in a much more general setting of random variables, sums of dependent. But this is just for the case of a subgraph of complete graph. What's interesting, the feature here, again, like in the Bolobash theorem, you take some kind of quantity over all, you minimize, optimize over all subgraphs. That's a typical feature. And, of course, now using this, you can very quickly finish the proof, similar to the independent number or the chromatic number. If you don't have the Ramsey property, there must be a hole which is H-free, and this is very... Now, you apply this. Now, you have to choose you have to choose P so that this quantity will be of the order N. So the bound is e to the N, e to the minus N. So to beat 2 to the N in front. And, of course, a little algebra tells you that you should actually choose P that much when this parameter, again, very similar to the Bolobash parameter, with the minus 1 in here, which is responsible for this N. Because what we really want now with this, with such a P, where M is such, the expected number of copies of every subgraph of the graph in question is at least N. And this is what is really needed here to kill this 2 to the N factor. Okay, so that's all about vertex coloring. So there were those two features, as I said, one that it generates a chromatic number, and the other that is sort of Jansson inequality was partially motivated by this, and it was one of the first applications of that inequality. But now let's move on to edge coloring, which is the main feature. And again, the history here is that the first case which was solved, and again, it was solved actually in that paper by Frankel and Redl, to some extent, maybe because they had something else in mind, so they didn't care. It was a lemma, so it was not the best statement, and in particular, it didn't have the lower bound, the zero statement, so-called. But then this, with Wuchak and Vogt, we proved it both ways. So this is a property now we will focus for a while, for say, two slides. So once again, if you don't remember this notation, once again, this means, this is the random graph, this means that every two coloring of its edges produces a monochromatic triangle. And the goal is to find threshold P for that. And sort of miraculously, we are lucky that there is a very cute, neat, and nice idea of Goodman from 59, which was used by him to count triangles in a graph and its complement together, which really means in our setting, not in a random graph yet, say complete graph, monochromatic triangles. And this is such a nice single trick. Instead of counting monochromatic, you count two colors, the opposite, not monochromatic. But if you just have two colors, it means two edges are red, one is blue, or vice versa. And the right way to count them is to go to sum over all vertices this product, where BV is the number of blue, the blue degree of the vertex and the red degree of the vertex. Because if you take the blue degree of the vertex and the red degree, every edge which connects the endpoints makes a non-monochromatic triangle. So this sum gives you the number of non-monochromatic triangles, but twice. And this really leads quickly by some trivial optimization, by convexity, to conclusions that if you have a complete graph and you two-color, you'll have at least one-quarter of approximately, this is exact, one-quarter of all the triangles will be monochromatic. So not only one, but very, very many. So in particular, it tells you that if you have this K6, you have always two monochromatic triangles, not one. This is a formula. Now, what was very surprising, and I don't know if it was known before, we discovered it with Svante Jansson and Tomasz Wuchak when we wrote the book on a random graph, that this simple result implies Mantel's theorem. So somehow it was really independent. I prepared this, but this Mantel's theorem is already mentioned third time today.
It's exercise in the last
book. Okay, that's anyway, it's easy. So, but why I'm telling this, because the same feature then is true for random graphs. So I will just state those two results. The first one is for the random graph, and then, so the first one is, I call it theorem R, because like two run. So one is the Ramsey, the density version, And so the threshold is of the order of n to minus 1 half. That turned out just from calculation, but I will tell you later what is the general feature, why this n to... I mean, yeah, I can tell you right now why this is the threshold, because if p is of the order n to minus 1 half, what's the expectation of triangles? It's n cubed p cubed. If you plug in, you got n to 3 half, which is the same as the number of edges. And that's crucial. If the number of triangles is much less than the number of edges, you can easily sort of destroy, you can color the whole thing so that there is no monochromatic triangle. You just think of this as a hypergraph where the triangles are the edges of the hypergraph, and it's very sparse. And as soon as it becomes dense, it was not hard to prove that not only the Ramsey property is true, but for every two colorings there are lots and lots of monochromatic triangles. And it really follows in a similar fashion as Mantel theorem as an exercise follows from this Goodman count. You can get this density result. And this was actually the result Franklin Redl wanted to get as another lemma for something else, I think. But anyway, that was already observed by them. So, in fact, what Yoshi showed you in the last lecture was just an alternative way. Of course, he chose K3 because it was simple to show, but this is an alternative proof of the density statement for K3, which avoids regularity. It's very elementary. But, of course, it doesn't work for K4. Triangles and two colors is the only instance of this problem where the two things meet, when you can have implication both ways, sort of between Ramsey and Turan. This is the only situation. So what about the general H and R? Let me first state the result. So the threshold turns out to be this number. Now, why this ugly, or at least at the first look, ugly parameter pops up? Simply, with P of this form, the number of H, and moreover, the number of copies of every subgraph of H is at least of the number of edges. You need to realize you make color avoiding monochromatic. It's tedious to show that if you are below, but elementary in terms of means used. I will soon give you the main idea or ideas behind that proof. But first, let me mention briefly, I don't know what the other talks will have as the contents, briefly that you may also ask similar questions about the Turan or density versions, the theorems. Here, as already said by Yoshi, this is maybe I know more than he knows, or maybe I shouldn't say that, but I talked to Angelica. She said that they are writing the proof of the conjecture he had for K5, which implies, of course, also the density for 5. Because the density theorem for K4 was already proved earlier in this 96, right? So only the conjecture was not proved at that time. Okay, so let me now briefly tell you the idea of that proof. So the idea, in a sense, is not surprising in mathematics to use induction. However, in the context of random graphs, there are not. I don't remember any theorem which uses induction. So in a sense, that was something it came up to our mind when trying to do it some other methods. Then we said, okay, maybe induction. This induction has a very easy start because. So what is the beginning? If R is one color only, everything is monochromatic. So the world is great. Everything, or rather gray, I should say, everything is monochromatic. Or the other initial case, one edge. If you have one edge, and no matter how many colors, everything is, every edge is monochromatic. So it's an easy start. And then, on a target graph H, and remove an edge. Actually, any, but it doesn't matter which one in our proof. And say, call it H minus or H delete or whatever. And by induction assumption, There are lots of monochromatic copies of this deleted graph in the random graph. Of course, this is sort of a field for applying this technique of so-called technique of two-round exposure. I will soon say what it is. But first, let me tell you that it is not immediate to see that if you have lots of monochromatic copies of that graph, you will have lots of missing pairs, because it could be that one missing pair belongs to too many of those, right? They might be clustered on one. So to conclude that indeed we do have lots of missing pairs, which is crucial for the proof, we have to handle somehow the number of such animals, such double creatures we call them. A graph without an edge and another one on the same pair joint. And for this, unfortunately, and this will be a little digression now, we were looking around for a good upper tail on the upper bound on the upper tail of the number of copies. And there was none. And in fact, those which existed were not strong enough. And here is the digression. Quite recently, I'm just talking about C4, but it is more general for some bigger class of graphs. So this is what I call the upper tail. So we wanted to estimate, but with with probability very close to one, that there won't be more than twice times the expectation copies of something, say of C4. And there was this lower bound by Van Wu, quite easy construction. You just fixed a concrete, complete graph in the random graph, and which appears with this probability, and it has plenty of copies. So there's a lower bound. And the upper bound was sort of away from this, and only recently with Oleszkiewicz, Krzysztof Oleszkiewicz from Warsaw, who happened to be in the audience when I gave a similar talk on in May, we managed to improve to almost match those bounds. Yet, this is not enough. This wouldn't be enough, even if this result was known in 1995, it wouldn't be enough for our application, because we have to, so for p equal 1 over square root of n, this is just n. But the constant is small, and we have to beat 2 to the n. No way. So we use some trick which is now called the deletion method for the upper tail, that we destroyed some edges, then counted the copies, then there were less. But the deletion didn't hurt, because in a sense it was a sort of a pseudo-random structure, so deleting few edges doesn't spoil it. Well, as I said, this is we managed to do some more. This is still sort of semi-open. First of all, to kill this log of 1 over p, and also to expand this for other graphs. Okay. And so the idea... Oh, I forgot to turn my stopwatch, so how much time I have?
You started a little bit late, but
yes.
On paper... In books, you have 10 minutes.
Okay, that's...
You can have a little more. Right?
Thank you. Okay, I counted on that. So this is briefly the idea, the continuation. So this is the two-exposure technique. For the binomial random graph, you give every edge, every pair, a second chance. So you flip a coin first with probability P1, condition on what you see, say, in that case, we color, and then continue, second round, with P2, but P1 and P2 are chosen so that the outcome is P for every pair. So that's GNP. And it's just convenient. This technique was known for even earlier, of course. But as happens with induction, you need sometimes to generalize your statement so that the induction step can go, and here are three direct generalized. Maybe it's not so important to go over it for too long. In the end, The idea is that those missing, so we applied the induction hypothesis, we had lots of monochromatic copies, and therefore lots of missing edges of the monochromatic copies, say red, and then using Semeredi regularity lemma, but in the dense case, dense Semeredi regularity lemma, we proved that the dotted graph is quasi-random, and therefore we can, and then the second round is applied to only to those edges. That's why we had to generalize in the first direction, not the complete underlying graph, but some quasi-random underlying graph. So we, because you can view a random graph that you have a complete graph and remove edges with 1 minus p. Instead, we remove edges here from an incomplete graph already. Random. And for the induction to continue, we need to know that what we are going to do next is also the same, quasi-random. And now, in the ideal situation, if we use red on any of those, you got a monochromatic triangle. If you don't use red, you got R minus one colors and apply induction. But of course, there is this is a case in between because we promise not just one but many, but it's just technical. And this dotted graph is dense because this quantity when is always so p is chosen so that this is always n squared. So the dotted graph is dense. This is why we could have used some radiographic theorema, not the sparse, although our random graph is sparse. But this dotted graph is dense. Okay, so this was the idea from this 95 paper. Now, this result was with Wojta, which I just described, gave a threshold, which was better than a weak threshold, but it was not a sharp threshold. So maybe, and this is actually my favorite picture, so I'm tempted to show you. So just ignore those two ends. This result with Wojta gave us some two constants. This is again in the language of edges rather than probability p. So n to 3 half is the threshold, but there are two constants from below and from above. So almost no graph has the property here. Almost every graph has property here. Now, to have a sharp threshold, we would like to find a much narrower. So we would like to narrow the gap. Narrow so that the width is little of n to 3 half. And I will describe that proof. So we only did it for R. The property R here is just triangles and just two colors. So again, it's a very simple case, although the proof is not simple at all. It takes, I wouldn't say more than 100 pages, but almost 100 pages. So to prove that the two colors and the triangle has a sharp threshold, which really means this. Of course, we don't know where it is. We know it's only somewhere here. And we don't know if this is a constant. We know it may depend on n, this point. Okay, so this is... Maybe I can keep it right. So to prove this sharp threshold, and this is a result of those four authors, we had to use this Friedgood criterion, which in this particular case, among many other things, implies or requires to prove the following. It has to prove that if you have one random graph, or rather pseudo-random graph, which means you fix the graph, which satisfies all the properties of the random graph with this P, but it doesn't have the Ramsey property in question. And then you have to show, as part of the proof at least, that if you on top of this graph sprinkle in a new random graph with a similar probability, but this psi can be arbitrarily smaller than C, for example, maybe much smaller than C, almost surely the outcome, the union of the two graphs, is Ramsey. And because of this small size, this is a big problem, this small psi. And how we went around that problem, how we solved the problem, is by, well, that's those pages I mentioned, there's an incredible amount of pages, but the basic idea was, the basic notion there is the base of a graph. The base of a graph is just a graph itself, a set of pairs, so that they close a triangle with two edges of the graph. So it's a graph on its own, but it is not a subgraph of the graph in question. It's something else, right? But like this. And now the crucial observation is that for every two coloring of G into R and blue, red and blue. Red and blue, okay. If this is the number of triangles, TR, if the number of triangles in the base, and maybe it's time for maybe you got bored with this. If the number of triangles in the base of the red is large, is as large as possible, I mean, in the complete graph, you can't have more, right? Then you can apply Janson in the second round, Because you can really view this demand from Friedgood criterion as a two-round thing. You have one graph and then another graph. So, and this graph, you have to show that the outcome has a property, so you can colorings in between, but then you have to multiply the probability of the error in the second round by the number of colorings, which is 2 to the number of edges again. So, by Janson, you will catch one of those triangles into the second round. And of course, if such a triangle like this is to be colored now after the second round is generated, there's no way. You lost, right? It's either red or blue is unavoidable.
How do you know that in the first round you have few colorings? Potentially you can have two to the three halves color.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is the main problem. This is the problem. Otherwise, the proof wouldn't take 80 pages. It would take one page. But so let me first. I will tell you how we did that. I mean, what we did in order to cope with this. Because unfortunately, these numbers multiplied don't go to zero, as right, because of this psi, which is very small. So, but first, let me tell you how we ensure that we have so many triangles. I mean, I will not tell you how. I just state the lemma, which says that no matter how small C you take and small lambda, there exists an A, so that every subgraph of the random graph of this P, which is lambda portion of the edges, its base contains lots of triangles. It's not very difficult. It uses sparse regularity lemma and some upper tail bounds, and it's, say, 4 pages, which is nothing compared with this. Okay. How we avoid this problem with that we have too many colorings? And this is maybe the most interesting thing, so allow me at least to tell that. So we showed that there exists. So remember, this graph G is a sort of pseudo-random graph. You can view G as a random graph with probability C over square root of n. We showed that there exists a family of subgraphs of this graph, such that for every proper coloring of the edges of the graph, proper means non-monochromatic triangle, at least one of those cores, we call them, the elements of this family, is monochromatic. And this shifts the problem, so we don't need to worry about every coloring, now we need to worry about every core. If we can find lots of triangles in the base of every core, we are done. Because no matter how many colorings, they go through this bottleneck of course, we have to show that not only this, but also that the family is significantly smaller. But in order to apply this lemma, you need to know that the cores themselves are large. So this is a small family of large sets. And moreover, it has this property. And to prove this, we had to sort of invent or prove a new kind of regularity lemma, which in a sense combines sparse graph regularity lemma and the hypergraph regularity lemma. It's a special case of this hyperregularity lemma of Franklin and Redl. It's just very general, but then we apply it to stars only. So it's because of the no dense patches condition, which is in general very hard. So we are afraid that this new regularity lemma may be not useful for anything else but this, because the no dense patches condition is very hard to verify for anything which is other than stars. But who knows? Maybe in the future we can do. So, and this really finishes the job. I have a minute. I would like to say about some. Do I?
Well, it depends. So we started later, but you now have precisely 5 minutes, right? So yeah, so three.
Three is fine. Okay, three is fine. Because I would like to say about some interesting sort of side effect or direction of research which came up while we were working on this huge thing. A sort of a game, a Ramsey game against a random graph. There is an online version which I probably not have time to mention, but the two-round version, which sort of reflects the proof I gave. So you play against two random graphs. One comes first, Gn, M1. M1 is number of edges, and you have to color them, avoiding a monochromatic triangle, using two colors first. So you color, then the second random graph comes on top of it, and you have to finish your coloring. If you can, without multiplication, you win, otherwise you lose. So the most interesting case in view of our result with Wojta and is if M1 is very close to the threshold, but not so, that you can still color. And then how long? This also gives some light on how sharp is the threshold. So you are given a graph which has just so few random edges that you can color. Now you color as you wish, and then the question is how many more edges you can survive. And by this lemma, which I just mentioned, that you have always n cubed triangles in the base of the majority color, say red, clearly at least one of those triangles will be hit in the second one if you have more than n edges. So you will not survive more than n, almost surely. But to our surprise, the truth is much worse, or much the result we get is much stronger, and this is due to the following powerful lemma, which for some reason I call Yoshi lemma, which is similar to the lemma we had before, except that in the conclusion, it's talking about the intersection of the base of two largest colorings. It's for three colors, because we want to apply it also for three colors, but you can see that the third color is empty. Then, of course, it's just about two colors, and the base and the edges, which are both simultaneously in the red, in the base of the red and the base of the blue, form lots and lots of triangles, and in particular, there must be n squared of them. So immediately, and here is a very surprising result, any amount of edges in the second round which goes to infinity kills you, because you will have at least one of those edges. And there's no way to color. If you have just two colors, this is the situation from the picture I had, but I didn't, from the lower one. Right? The black edges are in the base of red and blue, so no way to color.
It's because you forced yourself.
Yeah,
So you don't have many choices about the color of the first graph. You already colored.
But remember, you may have the C very much smaller than the critical C.
Right.
The order of magnitude is the same, n to 3 half, but you may be far away. This constant is like 1 over e, but you may have, say, 1 millionth, and still... Now, but the same lemma gives a corollary for... as a corollary result for three colors, and it basically says, maybe the first part follows, that if you have more than n edges, because then you will hit one triangle, and if you hit that triangle with three colors now, say the third color, say yellow, no way to color, right? So, and surprisingly, again, this n is sharp, because if you have less than n color in the second round, you can apply the following strategy. Only use colors for the first round, and the third color exclusively for the second round. And as long as the number of edges is little of n, no triangle, almost surely. And maybe even more surprisingly, R at least 4 is trivial, because you use two colors first and two colors then. And so it's trivial in the sense that it's expected. So these are the most recent results. We are still sort of writing them up. Last slide is just some indication of what else have been done or is being done. Just a little. So online games and you edge, you can win and to force four edges online, you lose. So edges, random edges, like a random graph process. Start Kreuter, Takava Kreuter, vertex coloring case is done, edge coloring case, if I or graph is arbitrary by the first, by the two densest graphs. Instead of coloring pairs, you can color triples or whatever, and then you have hypergraphs. There is just one paper which came in this search of Mickey that about hypergraphs. And also, we've been studying those Ramsey properties of sets of integers, so rather van der Waarden and Schur. And in both cases, I mean, if you're talking about three arithmetic progressions, the threshold is n to minus 1 half. Simply means the square root of n. So what Yoshi said, that square root of n edges are not only for Ramsey, but even for density, for arithmetic progressions. For sure, it's an about density, but the coloring version is solved in that paper with Graham. Thank you very much. Sorry for overtime.